We're back with more of Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. When Anne O'Farrell first entered the workplace, she was a drama therapist, a theater set and costume designer, and helped run a children's theater in Ireland.
But things have changed, and it took O'Farrell's move to the United States, Florida in particular, to lead her to start writing about the country in which she grew up. And her work with children has now inspired two books of historical fiction, including Nora's Children and the latest Roisin Song.
She'll talk about the book later this week in Milwaukee, but speaking from Florida, she talked with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski about what makes Irish literature distinctive.
For me, I like to hear the voice. My background is in theater, so I want to hear a genuine voice, whether it's in the narration or the dialogue. And I get very nervous when Shure and Begaras are put in every now and again, because I think the Irish have a very distinctive way of speaking and a very distinctive way of writing. So that's part of what I want to hear. And I also want to hear, for me, I want to hear a little bit that I didn't know before about Ireland or the people or the history. That's good Irish writing. Edward Rutherford, although he's not an Irishman, has written two wonderful books about Ireland. That's what I enjoy.
And you yourself, in your educational background, you studied drama at Trinity College in Dublin.
Yeah,
you later taught drama therapy. And you also were a teacher, drama therapist, theater director, and designer, all in Ireland.
I know.
What kind of career path was that? What inspired you to explore those fields of interest?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've always done amateur dramatics ever since I was a small child. When I got older, I had all kinds of careers, including what we called them in those days, an air hostess with Aer Lingus. So I had a very strange path to theatre. But when I got married, I started running a small theatre company with young children, young people in the area. That grew and grew and grew. And eventually I decided perhaps I'd better go back to college and get a piece of paper to prove I could do what I was doing. So I did. And when I was in Trinity, I learned about drama therapy, which I think is a wonderful method of working with physically or mentally handicapped people. And the next career started from there. So I became all of those things. I worked in daycare centres and psychiatric hospitals. I worked in problem areas, perhaps. I worked with children. I worked with adults. And the other side of it was I worked with the National Youth Theatre for a while. I worked at a new theatre company called Theatre Works. So it was a little bit of everything. I was never bored, for sure.
Absolutely. Sounds like you were very busy. What role did writing have in your life at this time when you were doing all these different professions? And why do you think you didn't start writing Irish literature until you now live in the United States?
Well, as I say, I was doing a tremendous amount of different things. But when I came to Florida, I started writing back home to tell folk the differences between Ireland and America, the different way things were, the different way people spoke. And then the folk in Ireland are going, they're very funny. Why don't you write short stories like that? So I began writing goofy short stories. And then somebody said, well, they're great fun. Why don't you get those published? So I began to get them published in magazines and things like Chicken Soup. And then somebody said, well, what writers group do you belong to? And I went, writers group? Well, now, mightn't that be a good idea? So I went along and I joined a writers group. And I discovered that they were all writing very large tomes and they were writing novels. And I thought, my goodness, perhaps I could do that. So that's what inspired me to start. It started very small and it kind of growed. And I wondered what I was going to write about, which eventually brought me to Nora's Children, the first book, first novel.
What kind of research goes into choosing your book subjects? Because as you mentioned, Nora's Children, it's in Ireland, but it's in the early 1920s and 1930s. Where did you hear of the story of Nora's Children that made you want to draw this out and follow these five different children?
I tell the tale, and it's nothing but a true tale. If you remember from when you were a child, if you stay very quiet when adults are talking, you hear things that perhaps you're not supposed to hear. But you can't ask any questions, because if you do, either you're sent to bed or they stop talking. So when I was young, I heard a group of women in our household going, well, how could anybody do that to children? How sad, how dreadful is that? And I'm killed with curiosity to know what they're talking about, but I dare not ask a question. But it did, in my head, as a young child, I was thinking, they're talking about the Children of Lear. The Children of Lear is an Irish legend, a myth, a beautiful story, which children are told in Ireland. And so I was connecting the two, and that's the story of an Irish chieftain with a wife and four small children, and it's what happens to the children when the mother dies. So the inspiration of the gossip I heard in the household, plus the Children of Lear, is what started me on Nora's Children. But research is a horrible subject. I thought it would be really easy to write about cottages and Ireland and simple things instead of kings and queens and castles. But, you know, it is much more difficult to find out what gives a horse colic than when King James I reigned.
Exactly. And were you searching through primary documents or talking to people who lived in that manor? Or did you even go back to Ireland yourself?
I only left Ireland 10 years ago. So I was reared in Ireland. I am very familiar with Ireland. I've attended real wakes in Ireland. So a lot of it was, I suppose, absorbed with infant milk. But other people, I spoke to a lot of people. And yes, I did a tremendous amount of reading to make sure I had things correct. I named the villages with non-existent names because I knew if I put a real village in there that I would hear from Irish people who told me that the church wasn't on that corner or the pub wasn't on that corner. And in fact, I did get one message from a lady in Ireland, and she said, I thought you were an Irish writer until I saw that you used the word casket instead of coffin. And I knew you couldn't be Irish. I only used the word once, and it was because I was just trying to find an alternative to the word coffin.
Very close readers, it sounds
like. Very, very.
With your background in theater, did that help you in your writing for the dialogue?
Very.
And did you find it an easy transition to go from these short stories to these longer stories with, you know, these settings and these scenes, much like you would have in the theater, but now it's in written word?
Yes, the transition from short stories, it was very different because then I was relating a tale. In the novels, I think I'm very much introducing people to a different kind of Ireland to the one they might have been familiar with, or that they might be familiar with, particularly in my most recent book, Roisin's Song. It was very important for me to share things which I thought maybe people didn't know about Ireland and hadn't heard about Ireland or things that happened in Ireland.
Yeah, let's go into that, because Roisin's Song, it kind of follows, I find, well, I read Nora's Children and I read Roisin's Song, so it's kind of the front and the tail end of what you've written so far. But they at least start on children, and in Roisin's Song, she's a child living on the coast of Ireland, and she finds herself in a mishap and is sent away by her family to Dublin, and she ends up working in a laundry run by the sisters. And in Irish history, these are referred to the Magdalen Laundries. So what grabbed your interest in these laundries in Dublin, and what role did it play in Irish history?
Oh, my goodness. Well, again, my experience was very personal. When I started school in Dublin at the age of five, I lived on the outskirts of Dublin, and my mother would take me by the hands, and she would take me across a fairly busy main road, and then she would pat me on the back and she would go, off you go, and I was to walk the rest of the way to school on my own. I walked through these big tall gates, and it was like countryside. On one side there were fields, there was a small fence, and there were always children playing in the field. And as I came around a little bend in the Boreen, on the right-hand side was this enormous building, about five stories high, an old, old red brick building. And at one end of it were these big double doors, and smoke billowed, white smoke billowed out of those doors, and there were shadowy, dark figures inside. I passed this every day. I saw these children every day. I saw the smoke and the figures every day. And I was terrified. And I ran well past them every single morning on the way to school. And when I was about, three, four years later, I went to another school and I forgot all about it. But then about 15, 20 years ago, I started to see photographs in the newspaper about this particular building. And my heart leapt and I went, that I remember that building. And so I started to research it. And when I researched it and what had happened in and around that building, I felt I had to write that story for people who couldn't or hadn't written that story. And in fact, that particular place that I passed was one of the most notorious of the Magdalen laundries.
So what kind of women found themselves at these laundries? And essentially, you know, I'd say it was even worse than indentured servitude because you didn't really gain your freedom at any point.
No, there was no time. There was no time limit that you served. And there were, I misremember the numbers, but there were thousands and thousands of women who were put there. It was classified loosely as a reformatory. And so under that heading, any and all women could be put in there for any and all reasons. And they were, sadly. And it was simply that that was a good place to put them with the nuns. Then they would be cared for. Unfortunately, that wasn't really the case.
Right. In fact, in 2013, the Irish Parliament and the Irish Prime Minister at the time, Edna Kenny, she made a formal apology on behalf of the Irish state for its role in the laundries. So what brought about, not necessarily retribution, but common knowledge, like what made these buildings and these laundries come to light?
I think it began, there was a lot of publicity about one in another part of the country, where the remains of several small babies were found in a water cistern close by what had been another convent that looked after mothers and young babies. And this was one of the sparks that lit the fire. In the particular place I've written about, which was surrounded by very large grounds, some of the grounds were sold to a contractor. And when he excavated those grounds for building, he found the remains of young women. There were no headstones. There were no markers. There was no record of there being graves there. And that's when things began to unravel, if you like, and the information about the Magdalen laundries really became more public.
Yeah, and this story really brings to light, you know, what these women would have experienced. Since the women there, I suppose it was really relatively kept hush-hush and wasn't really known of the terms and conditions till afterwards. So how did you gain your insight to really have Roisin, your main character in the latest book, have her really give light to these and walk us through the conditions she was going through every day and the duties and the tasks?
I feel that the nuns in these places, in many instances, were as unhappy to be there as the girls and the women themselves. Because of the large families in Ireland, if a daughter didn't get married, if there was no way for a daughter to remain in the home, there were very few alternatives. And so many of them became nuns, although that wouldn't necessarily have been their first calling. But I think a lot of these women were very bitter to begin with. Now they were left in the care of other young women. My own experience, even in schools, and my family's experience of sometimes dreadful cruelty that was exercised upon them by the religious orders, which was defended by parents and by the church at that time. So I had a lot of information from different people. My own mother-in-law said that she did something wrong in school and she was stood upon a stool and had a leather medal hung around her neck as an exhibit to the rest. So everybody in Ireland, or many, many people in Ireland, had these experiences. So when I began to speak to people, I learned more and more and became more and more saddened by what I had learned.
Yeah, and it's not common practice, and I suppose childhood was much different back then compared to now. And your books center often on themes of family, typically starting off, as you mentioned, with a traditional Irish Catholic large family household, and either through change of family situation or number of children, it then turns the focus to these children and their own journeys and struggle as they adapt to these changes. So why is it important to you to give voice to these children and their trials in your books?
When I began, as I say, working, after I married in Ireland, I was required to quit my stewardessing work. When you were married in those days, you had to stop when you were married. So I stopped and had three sons. And then I decided to do this theatre work or drama workshop with young people, very young people, age 5 to 10 years of age. And the more I did it, the more the children were telling me things that I'm sure they weren't supposed to be telling me about in their little performances. And they weren't for public performance. They were for ourselves. They were just little playlets that we'd do and little workshops they would do. And I learned so many sad stories from these children, how to be hit across the head was a normal way for a parent to keep them in line, or that there were so many children that there was an awful lot of hunger. And the more and more I learned, the more I wanted to give these children a voice and a way of dealing with the things that were happening to them. It grew very, very slowly. For instance, I was working with 30 small children in a fairly poor area, and I said, okay, let's do one about going home to dinner. And so they got into small groups, and one decided to be a mammy, one decided to be a daddy, and then several children sitting down to the meal. And the one who was playing the father is going, sit down, bang, bang across the head, and don't do that, bang. So when they had finished the little play, I said to the whole group, I don't think I'd like to get banged across the head quite that often. And they're all going, no, it's not nice, miss. And I go, how can you duck that? And so between them, they started saying, well, I come in for dinner late, or I always sit at the other end of the table, or I'm always nice to my dad. So they were giving each other ways of coping with this problem. So that's how my concern with children started, and I tried to give the children tools, and I became more and more committed to that and speaking on behalf. It sounds like Ireland is a dreadful country. No, it's not. I don't write about very happy young children, and I don't write about very happy nuns, because that doesn't make good reading. So I write about the other side of it. And everybody says, are there no good nuns? And I go, yes, there are lots of them. And there are lots of happy children.
Yes.
But I write about the other.
Well, you've certainly done a great job with what you've written so far, and I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me today.
It's been fun. Thank you very much indeed. I greatly appreciate it.
Anne O'Farrell's latest novel is called Roisin's Song. O'Farrell grew up in Dublin, but she now calls Florida home. She'll talk about her writing and interesting things that she learned in her research in the cultural village at Irish Fest later this week.